Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Andy Finn Show. I'm Andy Finn, the Finn Man, and for the next hour, you're in Finland. Today is Monday, November 17th, and we are now almost 2 weeks into the Obama-elect presidency. And, of course, I wasn't here last week. I was traveling. I was out in California, and so I didn't do a post-election show. So for those of you who think I'm going to sit here and gloat, you are absolutely right. No, we don't have to gloat, but we do want to talk about a few issues that have come up, but that's not the first order of business. The first order of business is November 17th. So a bunch of interesting things happened on this date in his story. The first is that Elizabeth I ascended to the English throne on this date, November 17th. And, of course, it ushered in the Elizabethan era. She ruled so long, much as her namesake Elizabeth II is ruling a long time. Prince Charles turned 60 the other day, and he has now waited longer than any prince or princess to take to the throne of England, because his mother continues to live on. But Elizabeth I ascended, and anyone out there know the date besides my ex-wife Linda, who I know would know this off the top of her head? 1558. But that's going back quite a ways. Let's go a little bit later than that. Sir Walter Raleigh was put on trial for treason on this date. That'd be, yes, of course, 1603. And the last of the oldie but moldy dates I'll cover now. The U.S. Congress held its first session in Washington, D.C. The Capitol building was only partially completed, but Congress held its first session there. Of course, the Capitol had previously been New York and then Philadelphia. What year did the U.S. hold? I don't know that I'd have gotten this right till I looked. I knew that Thomas Jefferson moved into the White House in 1803, but it was 1800 that Congress held its first session in Washington, D.C., and it's been holding them ever since, and it's holding a lame duck session right now, which is semi-interesting, I suppose. In any case, let's move on to a few things that are happening in the world, and boy, are there some things happening in the world. So it turns out that, well, I usually try to start with some light news, or at least the most recent news. So in the world of science, astronomers have reported viewing other planets around other suns, other stars. That's the first time. Now, they've identified hundreds of planets that are out there in other, around other stars, meaning there are other solar systems, but they've inferred them from the gravitational pull that those planets have on the sun. And so they've never actually seen one with, and I don't want to say the naked eye, the naked telescope. And the reason is they compare it to trying to see a mosquito going across a headlamp of an automobile at like 3 miles away. You just can't see it very easily. There's so much light coming from these stars that you can't make out the planets around them from the distances that we are from these stars. And we're not very close to any of them. Keep in mind that a light year is 5.6 trillion miles, and the closest star is light years away. Anyway, I thought that was an interesting little factoid. And a couple of deaths in the world of music. The first is Mitch Mitchell died last week, and Mitch Mitchell was the drummer for Jimi Hendrix. Jimi Hendrix is generally regarded as the greatest drummer in the history of rock. Oh, what am I saying? The greatest guitarist in the history of rock. And so his trio, the Jimi Hendrix Experience, was in many ways the ultimate power trio or rock trio. Well, the last surviving member of that group died at age 61. So that's the end of the Jimi Hendrix Experience. Also, Jody Reynolds died, a rockabilly singer who sang the song Endless Sleep back in the 50s. It was the number five song in the country in 1958, and it was the first of a series of these very weird songs, these tragedy songs, that we then had a slew of them. You'll remember some of the other ones if you don't remember that one. One of them is Teen Angel by Mark Dinning. You may remember Teen Angel. I'm going to spare you. I'm not going to try and sing it. The Everly Brothers did Ebony Eyes. Dickie Lee did Patches. Patches, oh, what can I do? I swear I'll always love you. But a girl from that place would just bring me disgrace. Patches, I'm coming to you. Well, Patches had committed suicide, and he saw her body floating by in the river. Of course, she lives in a different section of town, but her body floated by in the river, if I remember the storyline correctly. So he decided to off himself that night so they could be together. And that's what passed for popular music back in the 50s. Of course, there was plenty of other stuff. But there were these weird, weird songs about death. And you may remember, oh, where has my baby, could my baby be? The Lord took her away from me. She's gone to heaven, so I got to be good, so I can see my baby when I leave this world. Mm-hmm. Enough of that. Anyway, maybe that's the death of the death songs, but it's gone. And so is rockabilly singer Jody Reynolds. The inaugural parade is coming up on the 20th of January, and it's all the buzz around here for several reasons. One is people are trying to figure out if there's enough space to go down and see it, if you want to be part of it. And of course, more people want to be part of this one than, well, let's just say, than wanted to be part of the last one in 2004. And so they're putting up fewer bleachers down on the mall, and that means more sidewalks will be freed up, and there'll be more standing room for people. The other kinds of things that are going on, and it's a little bit crazy, people are trying to get airlines tickets, and they're looking for lodging. And so people are starting to rent their places for unheard-of sums of money. So it's just an interesting approach. If you own a place in D.C., or they say even out here in Virginia, you can get a pretty penny if you are willing to move out for a few days. Let's get on to some more serious news, however. So we've got this financial crisis, and while I will deal with that if we have time later in the hour, I do want to point out there's a couple of things going on. One is that the states are looking for emergency aid. Arnold Schwarzenegger gave a news conference, and basically he's saying that his state, California, is facing a $29 billion budget gap, and he's got to have help. There's no way he can cut that much. There's no way you can float the loans through normal channels these days. States are going to have some help from the federal government, at least to tide him over. Not necessarily aid, certainly loan guarantees, and maybe aid. Also, and we will probably get to this in the second half, but Detroit wants a bailout. The U.S. auto industry is in trouble. GM, Ford are on the verge of bankruptcy because they have to make these large payments to their pension funds and their medical care funds for retirees and for current members. And their sales are down and their profits are non-existent. So they got problems. Nebraska is going to alter their safe haven law. They passed a law a few months ago, and it took effect, and it said that people could abandon their children without any repercussions if you did it the right way and you went to an emergency room and registered. And what they didn't expect, they expected people to drop off newborn babies they didn't feel they could take care of. What they did not expect was that people would drop off children from ages 1 to 17. And so people have been dropping off 12-year-olds and 15-year-olds and 6-year-olds and 9-year-olds that apparently these are parents who feel they just can't raise them anymore. Some cases it's behavioral problems. Some cases the parents don't have money. They're homeless. They don't feel they can take care of the children. So they're signing these kids over to the state. Well, Nebraska realizes they made a mistake. So the Nebraska legislature is in a special session right now specifically to rework this safe haven law that they have. And they are going to stop this idea that you can just abandon your kids. They're going to draw the line at a few days, probably, and maybe a few weeks old. But no dropping off kids once you've had them a while. Basically, it's not a return anytime you like policy. And imagine what that does to a child. You know, you're 6 years old, you're 12 years old, and your parents say, hey, I can't do this anymore. I'm going to drop you off at the state, and so they'll figure out something for you. I mean, just the trauma that's got to cause a kid. Anyway, they are going to get that changed in the next few days, I suspect. Barack Obama has resigned from the Senate. See, I knew he was a quitter. I knew that he couldn't stick it out. What does that mean? You know, if you're going to resign for the Senate early, why do we think he'll stay with us through 4 years of the presidency? This is the kind of argument I now expect to hear from the right. But he resigned because he's going to be resigning by January 20th. And since there's a special session, he doesn't want anything to do with it. No, the special session, there's a couple things going on. They're dealing with the budget thing. But I think he's got enough going on without trying to go to the Senate and cast votes. He ought to be focused on his transition. The other thing is they're going to decide Lieberman's fate within the Democratic caucus in the next couple of days. And I think he just as soon let the Democratic caucus punish Lieberman if that's what they're going to do. And I wasn't planning to talk about this, but I'm going to stop here for a minute and say they better punish Lieberman. The idea that he could go out and do what he did and still retain the chairmanship of an important committee, and I believe he has Homeland Security, is ridiculous. Let's recap the bidding and what he did. He endorsed John McCain, the Republican candidate. Okay, I can live with that because he thought McCain would make a better president, enough so that he felt he had to break ranks. Of course, technically he's an independent, but he caucuses with the Democrats, and he's been a Democrat most of his life until 2 years ago when he ran as an independent after he didn't get the Democratic nomination for his Senate seat in Connecticut. So that's not all he did, however. He then went out and campaigned actively with McCain and for McCain. He spoke at the Republican convention. He said Barack Obama wasn't ready to lead and, in fact, as much as said he'd be dangerous. And he campaigned for other Republican candidates. Lieberman is not worth having in the caucus. Now, Obama has said, please, you know, have mercy on him. Basically, let's play nice. If bipartisanship means anything, it begins right now. And so he's asked the Harry Reid and the Democratic senators to play nice. But he can't stop the Democrats from punishing him. And in the initial meeting that Reid had with Lieberman, as near as I can tell what came out of it, Reid said, look, you can't keep the big committee, Homeland Security. We're going to give you a little committee that doesn't do much. I think they were going to make him the chairman of the Small Animal Administration. But they're not going to let him keep Homeland Security was the implication. And Lieberman says, that's unacceptable. You know, the Republicans want me. I'll go caucus with them if you don't watch it. And they left it at that and left the meeting. That's how I understand what happened at the meeting. Now, I don't think Reid's going to back down from this, but there's a lot of people that think that they're not going to punish Lieberman. I still have faith that the Democrats are going to say it means something to be part of the caucus and it means something to step outside it and you can't get away with it. So we'll see about that. But it just strikes me as very weird that you could possibly get away with this. So I don't know whether they'll keep him in the caucus. You know, it's one more Senate vote. They have 56 votes with Lieberman. They have 57. And then there's three undecided, which we'll talk about later. Frankly, what's he going to do? Vote with the Republicans on social issues? No, he's been a liberal most of his life. Most of his positions are with the Democrats anyway. He's got to think about his run for re-election. Where he'd go over and caucus with the Republicans, he's in the minority, first of all. He doesn't get any committee chairs. And secondly, he has no seniority over there. And thirdly, he's got to run for re-election in Connecticut in 4 years, unless he wants to retire. And if he runs as a Republican, I don't think he'll win. We just divested ourselves of the last Republicans here in the Northeast. Actually, I grew up in the Northeast, upstate New York. I'm now in Virginia. But the Northeast has no more Republicans. Well, that's in the House, actually. There's one or two senators hanging out in Maine that are moderate Republicans. But Lieberman's not all that moderate. He's such a hawk on the foreign policy stuff. So we'll see what they do about it. But we'll check it out. In any case, the Andy Finn Show will be right back. Hi, I'm Andy Finn. You know, even if someone handed me $1 million this morning, I'd still be doing my radio show on WEBR. Why? Because I have commitment. I have dedication. Plus, I signed a contract. Now, if you'll do the same, I'll have one more dedicated listener. Don't worry, you can void your contract if I ever get obsessed with liberals or gays, the flag, the pledge, embryonic stem cells, the UN, illegal immigrants, missing white women, or the country of France. So tune in the Andy Finn Show on WEBR, Mondays at 10 p.m. Hey, if you had $1 million, you could buy a radio station. We are back on the Andy Finn Show, and today's November 17th. On this day in history, the Suez Canal opened. Now, the Panama Canal opened in about 1903. Seems like that date's come up already this year. No, that was 1803. I mean, this show. What year do you think the Suez Canal opened? This basically linked the Mediterranean Sea and the Red Sea, so you no longer had to go all the way around Africa to get to India and points east. 1869. That's pretty amazing that we were building big canals like that in 1869. Of course, they've since increased the size of it. And the Dulles Airport was dedicated on this day by a U.S. president. What president do you think it was that opened Dulles, and what year? Now, I'll give you a hint here, or give you some background. One of the interesting things about urban planning is that when an area is expanding, one of the things you do is when you build a new airport, you build it a long ways away. For example, if you remember when the Denver airport was built a few years ago, everyone said, why are you building it out in the middle of nowhere? It was built, the new Denver airport, the old Denver airport's on the east side of the city. This was built like an hour and a half east and a little north of Denver, way outside. And of course, the mountains where people want to go skiing and things, recreational things, are on the west side of Denver. So you're looking at a two and a half hour drive across Denver to get, you know, up into the foothills. And so people say, why'd you build it so far away? But they did the same thing with Dulles. It's almost an hour ride from Dulles Airport into downtown D.C. Not quite, I suppose, but it's 45 minutes easily. And I remember the first time I flew into Dulles, and I said, why did they build this way out here? Of course, this would have been in the 70s. There's your clue. But Dulles was dedicated by John F. Kennedy when he was president. It was dedicated in 1962. And since then, the Dulles Corridor, as they call it, is part technology corridor, but it's just been built up tremendously. It's the area between Dulles Airport and Washington, D.C., and it's built up not just out to Dulles, but beyond Dulles. So that's the nature of, that is just the nature of urban planning. Let's get back to a little bit of what's going on in the news. So the Republican governors got together in Miami the end of last week, and it turns out that Sarah Palin was having a news conference at the Republican Governors Association meeting, and it was going to be, she announced that she was going to have a news conference, but it ended up not being just her news conference. She only took four questions, and most of her answers were like Nuke LaLoosh in Bull Durham, I'm just happy to be here, hope I can help the ball club kind of a thing, or more like, you got to play them one game at a time, I'm happy to be here. because she didn't really say much, but they only took four questions, and then one of the other governors, and it might have been Bobby Jindal, might have been somebody else, stepped to the microphone. I guess it was Rick Perry, governor of Texas, now that I think about it, stepped to the microphone and interceded, and then some of the other governors had comments, I guess. I didn't see the whole news conference, but she had a very short, abbreviated news conference. And the message the governors were sending was, this is the Republican Governors Association, and we're not going to have any one governor give a news conference and be perceived as our, quote, leader. And frankly, the behind-the-scenes story said that a number of governors, including Rick Perry, including Bobby Jindal, including Tim Pawlenty of Minnesota, Mark Sanford of South Carolina, Charlie Crist is in Florida, these folks all brought substantive proposals to the conference, things that would help bring the Republican Party back from the wilderness in 2 years, 4 years, however long, and things that they want the states to do and want the states to ask the federal government to do. Sarah Palin did not bring anything substantive to the meeting, apparently. And so from their point of view, you know, what they're saying, what the other governors are saying, is more important than what Sarah Palin is saying, since she doesn't actually have anything to say. Moving into international affairs, Pakistan and the U.S. have a deal, but it's a tacit deal on these airstrikes. Now, you may remember back in the campaign, Barack Obama said that if we had actionable intelligence about bin Laden or higher-ups in Al-Qaeda and Pakistan wouldn't take action, he would. And people came out and said, oh my gosh, Barack Obama is saying he's willing to attack our ally, invade our ally, Pakistan. That's terrible. That's reckless. So it's clear he's not fit to lead. Well, John McCain made this remark. Even George Bush made it. And it was so silly for him to get involved in this, but I heard him on a Sunday show, I think it was, or some kind of an interview. And he actually used the phrase that Obama said he would invade or else attack Pakistan. That's not what he said at all. Not attacking Pakistan. He's attacking Al-Qaeda within Pakistan. And the Bush doctrine itself, if you go back to it, is that if you're not with us, you're against us. So he's always threatened to go after the terrorists wherever they hide and, in fact, consider you as on the terrorist side if you aren't helping us get them. Well, the Pakistanis haven't done much on that border area, in that border area where Al-Qaeda's been hiding and where bin Laden's hiding over the last 6 or 7 years. And in fact, the Bush administration has now come around to Obama's position that McCain and Bush both criticized, as well as most of the Republican pundits, meaning the right-wingers, you know, the radio talk show hosts and the people in the right-wing echo chamber, all argued this was a sign that he wasn't ready to lead. The Bush administration's been doing it. They've been doing an airstrike every 4 or 5 days. And now it turns out, the Washington Post reports as of yesterday's paper, the 16th of November, that we have an agreement since September to have a don't ask, don't tell policy, essentially. We send Predator drones in and we attack the suspected terrorist targets. A lot of times it's a house in the rugged, you know, mountains of western Pakistan or something, where we have found that Al-Qaeda leaders or an Al-Qaeda leader is gathered, or there's some people meeting, and we bomb it and blow the house up. And we've had civilians get killed in some of these, but we always believe we're getting the Al-Qaeda leader as well. They may be hiding behind family or children or somebody else. But we've done this a number of times now, and the Pakistanis protest loudly, and we now have an agreement that we will continue the strikes. They will continue to protest. Nod, nod, wink, wink. Well, that certainly sounds like a position that originated with Obama. I mean, they were probably doing it secretly inside the Bush administration, but he was the first to talk about it. And, of course, people called him naive for talking about the policy that the Bush administration has now come to. Another policy that people have come to that was Obama's first was also covered in yesterday's paper. The Prime Minister of Iraq, Maliki, and the Shiite cleric Muqta al-Sadr, both agree now on a U.S. departure in 2011. Now, that's very close to Obama's timetable. The Iraqi government tipped their hand about 3 months ago on this, three, 4 months ago on this, before the election. And the word behind the scenes is that they were going to push for 2010, and the Bush administration said, no, no, don't make it 2010. That's within Obama's timeline of 16 months. Make it 2011, please. And so they said, okay, we'll make it 2011. That'll save your bacon, President Bush. You've done a lot to us, I mean for us, so we're willing to do that. So that's just an interesting aside there, but that's what's going on with that baby. So anyway, as we look at the news, of course, the main thing we've got is the Obama transition coming up. And before we get to the transition, I need to go back and talk about the election, because I did not do a post-election show on Monday, November 10th. So it's interesting to note, over the last almost 2 weeks now, the rhetoric that we've seen on all sides, the conservatives, the moderates, the liberals, in the press. You know, there's Fox News is your conservative wing, MSNBC is pretty liberal, CNN's kind of in the middle, the networks are kind of in the middle. The argument is they've been in the tank for Obama all this time. We'll address that in the next segment. But in general, it's just interesting to look at the split between these views, and also right-wing talk show hosts versus left-wing talk show hosts, both on radio and television, commentators, and their whole take on this. And so we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we are going to address some of that and deal with this difference between the right wing and the left wing and the center wings on the analysis of what happened in the election and what it means.